Welcome to episode 126 of Count Me In. Thanks for coming back and listening to IMA's podcast. I'm your host, Adam Larson, and today's expert guest is Bob Kaloji. Bob is Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer for Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, a national federation of 35 independent, community-based, and locally operated Blue Cross Blue Shield companies. In his role, he is responsible for the Blues' federal employee program, oversees the National Employee Benefits Administration, and has overall accountability for Blue Cross Blue Shield brand management and the association's finance, licensure, enterprise information technology, and information security areas. During his conversation with my co-host Mitch, Bob discusses the role of the CFO in building organizations ready for the future. Keep listening to hear his perspective on innovation, data, and value.
So for our conversation today, we really want to, you know, emphasize the role of the CFO and making sure that they are capable of building organizations ready for the future. Now, innovation certainly is a term we use often in accounting and finance as organizations seek to create and increase value. So to start off, I would really like to know what innovation means to you.
Yeah, thanks, Mitch. And thanks for the opportunity to address the IMA today. It's a great group and I love to be part of your events. So thank you for that. You know, with respect to innovation and accounting, let's put it in perspective. And I've always, you know, said this at the beginning of innovation conversations with finance people. It's like, well, we don't want y'all to be all that innovative. I mean, you're accountants for all, after all. And, you know, you need to be careful, right? So there's all kinds of accounting principles and things like that. And we don't want you to be creative with that. Now, maybe be creative about how you do what you do, right? And so how can you, as an accountant or a finance person in an organization, you know, actually innovate in a way that creates value? And so, you know, when we try to take that apart, I look at value as the sum of three things, cost or efficiency, quality, and service. And so anyone can apply those principles to what they do, I think, and add value. And so for me, innovation, particularly in accounting and finance, in those disciplines really is focused more on those things and keeping them in balance, right? So an innovation can accelerate any of those one things, any one of those things. And as long as it does that without detracting from the other two, it's adding value. So for me, it's kind of that simple. And, you know, when you look at what we've been in for the last, you know, 14 or 15 months with the pandemic, it really sort of dots the I on the need for innovation. Right? We had to pivot in so many ways that we never would have expected so quickly. And, you know, true innovations have come out of that in many forms. And now it's a matter of advancing those and, you know, in some cases, bringing them to scale. There were certain things that came out of the pandemic that were really innovative and, you know, they're going to stick whether we expected that to happen or not. The time after the pandemic will be not like anything we expected or planned on our prior trajectory.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, among these different conversations that I have, I've certainly seen many organizations who have explained that they will be adapting some of these ongoing principles moving forward and making it part of their business because of how they had to pivot and adapt in the last year plus. My next question, continuing on this topic, as far as innovation goes and the different components that you spoke about, what is specifically the CFO's role when it comes to initiating this change, enabling innovation, driving the anticipated results, evaluating those results? You know, where does the CFO really make an impact?
Yeah, I think, you know, innovation and, you know, enabling, you know, new thinking and so forth is really an area where the modern CFO can differentiate themselves from the more traditional, you know, financially focused leader. You know, and if it's done well, the CFO can become the corporation's architect for business value. I saw an article recently from Accenture on this, and I found it very, very interesting and poignant. CFOs are uniquely positioned if they apply certain levers that they have access to be able to create, you know, to be able to create this differentiation and be the architect of business value. And just to list off the levers quickly, you know, visibility of the whole enterprise. The CFO typically, because they deal with all parts of the company, has a view into what is going on in all those parts and the ability to see where synergies exist across those verticals. the ability to do analytics and have access to data across the enterprise is really critical. CFOs not only have access to financial data, but now more and more operational and market data and a variety of things that they can bring together to bring insights that are actionable to the organization. Understanding enterprise risk is a critical role that the CFO or critical conversation or part of the conversation that a CFO can bring, you know, because they can measure risk and they know that, you know, you may be able to take risks in one area of the company and balance that off with some protection and hedge in the other areas of the company. The CFO can and should have a strong relationship with all the C-level executives in the company, right? So there should be, you know, good working relationships there, and the CFO's ability to mentor and, you know, discuss things with his or her peers in a way that, you know, brings to life, you know, this greater business value. And finally, you know, the financial authority. I mean, the CFO obviously has a financial authority within the organization and can, you know, reinforce the economic basis for investment decisions, right? So the CFO can bring voice to somebody else's idea in a way that that person may or may not be able to do. And so, you know, these things can really be exploited by better collaboration with C-level peers, by leading in with unique insights, whether it's based on data, unique analytics, perspective on risk, or what have you, and then taking ownership for ensuring that value is extracted from all of the new technology and data platforms. You know, these things are proliferating, coming up all over the place. And I think it's the CFO's responsibility to make sure there's a value equation attached to each of those. Or if not, make sure everybody else understands that and make sure that expectations are aligned along those vectors. And CFO needs to be able to cultivate a good commercial awareness and stay ahead of the curve of the industry, right? So whether it's regulatory change, federal policy changes, the business environment changing, the competitive landscape changing, or just trends. And particularly important, I think, is understanding what the potential disruptors are. You know, I'm in healthcare. There are disruptors all around our industry, whether you're talking about health plans, providers, pharmaceutical companies. There are all kinds of people with great ideas about how to do what we do differently. And so being aware of that is critically important, you know, as you try to bring innovation and value into your organization.
That's great. And I want to go a little bit further on some of the points you just made right there, because many often relate innovation. They hear innovation, they think of technology, right? That's one of the biggest things. And the recent year plus, we've seen, regardless of the pandemic, some of the biggest technology innovation in accounting and finance has come through automation and the availability of data. So I think aligning our thoughts here on what you were just talking about, as far as what innovation really is from your perspective, being able to take advantage of some technological advancements that have become available to us. But really, you know, the value creation that you were just talking about, if it's in healthcare for you or accounting and finance professionals, how do you as a CFO go about harnessing the data, because there is so much of it at this point, and truly making or creating value from that data?
Sure. You know, and health insurance is a huge data business. We have, you know, records, and you can imagine Blue Cross Blue Shield provides health insurance for 110 million people in the country. And so we have all the claim records for them, for their medical care and for their pharmacy use. And so we know a lot, but what we know is relatively thin, right? So we know a person went to the hospital and, you know, they went to the ER and had an x-ray and got their broken leg set. But we don't have the x-ray results. We don't have, you know, the depth of the diagnostics and stuff that were done in the hospital. So not only are we looking at our own data, which is enormous, but we're bringing in non-conforming data from other sources, right? So connecting with hospital systems, electronic medical records, for instance, import data that makes what we have even richer and gives us the ability to do way more with the data. And I'm going to talk about a couple of those things. So just in terms of examples, one of the things that the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association strives to be is a thought leader in healthcare. And so we developed this Health of America report series that is a data-driven set of analytics, and we do publications periodically on different topics. You know, so using our data and the insights from our data to try to identify challenges in the healthcare space, right? So last year, maybe it was even a year and a half ago, we did a study on millennials and tried to understand their relative health compared to prior generations and what particular health issues were prevalent for millennials. And we had some really interesting findings. You know, first of all, millennials are more likely to have some certain chronic conditions and perhaps less likely to live a long and healthy life than the prior generation, which was a startling finding. And then additionally, a lot of behavioral health issues for millennials were evidenced, which, you know, enables us to say, okay, well, if that's a population cohort that we want to take care of and take good care of, then we need to adapt certain things. We need to adapt certain chronic care management approaches that are particularly important for millennials. And we need to build a better behavioral health or mental health system to accompany, you know, the physical health part, right? And so it's things like that and our ability to take huge data sets and study different population cohorts within them, come out with findings that are creating actionable insights that we can build into our products, build into our service set and so forth to achieve, you know, our mission of taking better care of people for the health of America. This whole thing rides on, as I was describing earlier, the ability to combine data from disparate sources, right? So interoperability is a huge issue in healthcare. Interoperability in healthcare is really kind of scarce right now, right? So what I described, you know, it's really easy to say, oh, a health plan's going to just go to the big hospital systems in their network, and they're going to connect with their electronic medical record systems, and they're going to import all this deep, rich data about people. We're going to go out and buy, you know, market data, prism clusters, whatever, to understand the socioeconomics of a population. And we're going to combine all that stuff and come up with all these rich insights. But there's not a standard. And, you know, we're working on that. And, you know, again, with our footprint in the industry being pretty big, you know, we can help drive interoperability solutions so that data is exchanged in a consistent way that when you, you know, particularly hit on a data element in a report, it means the same thing no matter what system you're in, and that it's safe and secure. So those things are critical to interoperability. And that's one of the underpinnings that we're working on. In terms of our data approach. Finally, I'll call out a few companies, you know, the Blue Cross Blue Shield companies, and there are now 35 of them domestically and hundreds internationally. The 35 domestics have joined to do corporate venturing. And so we're in our fourth corporate venture fund right now with a total of about 900 million of assets under management. And I'm just gonna highlight a couple of the companies that are in the Blue Venture Fund portfolio that are doing really interesting and relevant things with respect to data. So Abacus Insights is a cloud-based data management and interoperability platform that's specifically built for healthcare. So it's able to connect the payers and the providers and the other participants in the healthcare ecosystem in a unique way. There's a company called Alacura, which provides data analytics and network optimization for services about aeromedical transport. So, you know, you see the copters and the airplanes that are taking people either with respect to the helicopter, it might be from what they call a scene run. So if there was an accident on the highway, someone's really in bad shape, they'll call a copter instead of an ambulance so that they can get to the critical care center more quickly. And there are a lot of transports of critically ill people for transplant operations and high-level things where they have to be moved from place to place really quickly. So this this platform matches up aeromedical transport and medical capabilities. And then finally, a company called Prove. Prove provides mobile-focused identity authentication and data management platform, which improves member engagement. It reduces operating costs and streamlines digital processes. The origin of Prove was this two-factor authentication. So Prove has tons and tons of cell phone numbers in it. So it knows if you're in a call center and you've got Prove kind of bolted onto your inbound calls, it can tell you who the person is. And then your system can match that to a member record so that that call center operator is, you know, click right into the information about the person calling. So really valuable. And it alleviates the need to do some additional authentication when a person calls, right? So, you know, a lot of times you call and they say, okay, well, what's your mother's maiden name? Or, you know, what's the name of your first pet you had when you were a kid or something along those lines. So, you know, Prove is another platform that the venture funds have invested in that are really helping us move in this data space.
So it sounds like you have a tremendous amount of data, truthfully, more than I, could think of, but it obviously makes sense as you're explaining where it all comes from and how it all works together. As a CFO of the organization, in being able to share insight like this, it sounds like it's just a tremendous amount of opportunity, right? There's a ton of opportunity with data, but just for our listeners, I think everybody also recognizes with opportunity comes challenges. So when it comes to innovation, this data, taking all of this opportunity and creating value from it, how do you navigate really through these different challenges? And just thinking back to one of the first points you made in that last response about, the health of millennials, the findings that you have from your research must prove to kind of contradict maybe some of the initial forecasts that you've had. So things like that, what goes into really leading your organization for success into the future?
Yeah, when you think about that, and particularly with financial people, it's a lot about forecasting. And so we do a whole bunch of financial forecasting, but we do all kinds of other forecasting as well. And I guess for me, the best go-to here is, our industry, right? Health insurance. And I'm going to talk about health insurance in the context of the pandemic. And I think it'll point out some things that we knew and some things that we didn't know. And probably one of the most impactful externalities that we've ever experienced in our professional careers, right? I mean, unless you're 100 years old, you haven't been through a pandemic before. So, we're not 100 years old. When you put it in what happened to us last year when the pandemic hit was a really a series of conflicting headwinds. So we had headwinds with our customers, and our customers are the members, who subscribe, and the employers who generally buy the insurance for that person, right? So it's sort of a two-level customer set. And what people needed because of the volatility and loss of jobs and uncertainty for business was premium relief, right? So they're asking us, hey, look, cut us some slack on premiums for a while. And we did. We extended grace periods and things like that. In some cases, we forgave premium for people that were in certain, tough economic times and things like that. So on the customer side, that was one of the first things that came to us. So, from a financial person's perspective, oh, okay, well, we're not going to collect this quickly, or we're not going to collect at all. And so what does that mean, and how much is that worth? Then it was, okay, now let's make sure that everyone has access, right? Because the last thing you want when you're a health insurer is for your people, your members, not to be able to get care when they need it, okay? Because that's what we're here to do. We're here to make sure you can get care when you need it and it gets paid for. So the ability to access testing for COVID, the vaccines when they were available, and just services in general, right? Because the hospital system kind of shut down when COVID hit with all the elective procedures and things like that. And so we needed to make sure that people understood if they were really sick, you can still get in. You need to be protected. You need to be this and that. So it was a matter of waiving co-pays and some of the economic barriers in our benefit design so that people could get all of the testing and COVID treatment that they needed. And so we spent a bunch of time on that. So that's the customer set. Our supply chain, so to speak, in health insurance is the providers, right? It's the hospitals, the doctors, the drugs, the air ambulance companies, all those things, the PT providers, the surgeons, et cetera. And the way we generally pay our supply chain in the industry is based upon volume, right? So they do something, we pay them. We call that fee for service, right? You go to the doctor, he checks you out, he bills us, or he or she bills us, and we pay the doctor. That's called fee for service medicine. But when volume goes through the floor, like it did in March and April of 2020, we're not paying them because there's no service being provided. So providers got cash short pretty quickly, and they needed help. So we put providers in some cases on interim payments. We'll pay you, a certain amount per month based on what your historical, spend has been for us, and we'll settle up later. So we're getting less cash from our customers, and we're needing to front cash to those, providers who are in kind of a tough spot. And, fortunately, we had the wherewithal, particularly Blue plans are very well capitalized, had the wherewithal to be able to do this at least for a while. So then it's like, okay, well, what does all that mean to us? So I described a cash shortage, a cash need. We ourselves had COVID-related costs that, were new to us, right? there didn't used to be that diagnosis. There didn't used to be treatment. There didn't used to be Regeneron used for people that are inpatient. All the ventilator use that was early in the pandemic and all those things were new costs for us. On the other side of it, there was this huge downdraft in terms of the cost of medical care. And so because people were deferring care and delaying elective procedures, there was an enormous amount of reduction in our expenses. And so you put all those things together and try to make a forecast. I mean, uncertainty was just more than it's ever been before. And we need to look to the future now and figure out, well, what's next? We know what happened in 2020. The big piece of our costs went down, some pieces went up. You know, we also had costs for ourselves because we put our workers remote. So any employer, you know, who went remote, we had to add bandwidth, we had to have people get gear to set up at home and all those kinds of things. So we had all of those costs. But as we look to the future and healthcare, health insurance is a long-term play, you need to know what's going to happen because of all the deferred care this year. When we look at the procedures that were deferred, they were largely good preventive medicine. You know, people weren't going to get the care that they typically would get, the routine diagnostics and stuff like that, to make sure that they don't have some underpinning chronic condition or some underpinning acute event on the way. So without having that preventive stuff, that good spend going on, what is going to happen to people next? And probably what will happen to people next is there'll be more acute episodes that'll be more expensive and probably damaging to people's overall health status. But we don't know what that is yet because we're still just coming out of the pandemic and the medical consumption, while it's kind of at a normal level, it's comprised of a different distribution of things, more COVID stuff and less typical elective and diagnostic stuff. So there will be long-term implications and we just don't know what those are yet. But we're still doing forecasts. It doesn't stop us from doing forecasts. We're taking our best guess. We've got actuaries all over the place trying to figure this stuff out and understand what's going to happen with the changing utilization patterns. The other thing that happened in the pandemic in our industry, which I think is really interesting and again, tough to project, the uptake on telemedicine. You know, because people didn't want to go or couldn't go to the doctor's office, doctors made themselves available to people through things like Zoom and video and a bunch of other technologies that actually are good and are probably going to be more the way of the future. You know, it won't all be that way. Some of it will go back to the face-to-face doctor's office stuff, but there's a fair amount of telemedicine that will continue. And that was accelerated and as a result of the pandemic. And then finally, you know, like everybody else, we're figuring out what this return to office looks like, right? Trying to figure out when it's going to be safe to send our people, you know, what the office is going to look like, who's going to be in, who's not going to be in, are we hybrid mode, or what is it going to be, and what's the cost of that, right? So we've got a bunch, right now we've got a bunch of office space we're not using. We have to rationalize that at some point in the future. So all these things go into our, you know, go into our projections, but I've been a CFO long enough to tell other CFOs, you know, my advice, just be careful. That's all. Know what could happen, do a lot of sensitivity analysis, but just be careful and protect your balance sheet. Because if you've got a strong balance sheet, you can weather stuff like this. And if you don't have a strong balance sheet, it's going to be hard.
Well, that's really the perfect way to kind of segue into this last question for you here. We certainly covered a lot when it comes to innovation and particularly the past year and a half, a lot of the changes. It was difficult, you know, 2020, and you said the last 14, 15 months. I think we can both agree that there are some positive outcomes that we can kind of focus on, you know, as far as innovation goes and being able to incorporate some of this into our business as sustainable operations. But, you know, just kind of closing thoughts from you, if you wouldn't mind sharing, when it comes to the role of the CFO. And again, we're trying to lead organizations into the future successfully, sustainably. What does that look like? What are some of the last thoughts and pieces of advice you have for our listeners?
Yeah, I think some of the lessons learned in the pandemic relate to several areas. Infrastructure is one of those. And, you know, not only within organizations, but within industries. You know, it was fascinating to me to see, and it's totally unrelated to healthcare per se, but the way the supply chains work in the country created shortages of things that people wanted to hoard when the pandemic came up, right? So all of a sudden, you know, and this is an interesting example, but people were hoarding, you know, paper products. And the way the supply chain was making paper products was a certain amount for industrial use or commercial use in office buildings, institutions, and things of that nature, and a certain amount for home consumption. And what happened when the pandemic hit is home consumption went way up and institutional consumption went down. And the supply chain wasn't ready to make that pivot. It took months and months for them to normalize that, because it's the same product, it just comes in a different package in a different shape, for them to normalize that and get it figured out. Another infrastructure piece, and this is a healthcare specific one for the healthcare ecosystem, is, the pandemic really put a spotlight on serious racial disparities and access to care. And we've known, anybody who's been in healthcare has known for a long time, that there are disparities and that people of modest means have a tougher time getting the same access and good healthcare that people with greater means may be able to attain. And, whether it's the prevalence of COVID in a particular population, which was higher, again, for populations that were more socially and economically challenged, particularly people of color, and one relates to the other, but the outcome's the same outcome. There were many more cases and serious cases of COVID in populations of color. And that is a terrible thing, but I don't think it surprised anyone in healthcare. It just sort of dotted the I in what we already knew. The good thing about it is that we're coming out with a greater focus on some of those things. I'll talk about that in a minute. The readiness of organizations to do these pivots was very unlevel. I think some organizations pivoted really well and others just kind of went out, almost went out of business. And so think about restaurants, right? I live in Chicago. There's a lot of restaurants. Well, there aren't as many restaurants as there used to be. There are some great restaurants that, obviously couldn't take patrons for indoor dining. And so they pivoted to carry out. And some of them did it really quickly, but some of them couldn't do it at all. I mean, you can really tell as, kind of a finance person, you walk down the street and you just look at a restaurant that's doing a decent carry out business and one that's just boarded up. And I think it, again, gets back to how much depth they had, right, to absorb that shock. And so being prepared for that is something that I think organizations really need to do. And reinforcing the importance of having the resources and frameworks in place to deal with contingencies. Plan ahead. Okay, well, what if? I don't think anybody ever would have done a what if on a pandemic. But you might have done what ifs on other catastrophes that would have had similar, consequences. And understanding, if this, then that with your business is just a really, really important thing, whether you're a big company like a health insurance company or an entrepreneur, running a shop on, Halsted Avenue in Chicago. Some of the positive things I mentioned earlier, the acceleration of, telehealth, innovation was accelerated, digital transformation was accelerated because we had to. And I think those things will stick, and they'll stick in just about every sector. I mean, think about the volume of things that are being bought through, all of the delivery vendors, right? Amazon, whatever, and all the likes of them. And again, we live in the city. You can get almost anything delivered to our house, whether it's food, groceries, supplies, tools, whatever it is. And in a pandemic, that's what everybody did. So the growth there, and I think, again, a certain amount of it isn't permanent, but a lot of it is permanent. And I think that and in our case, in healthcare, the telehealth conversion was truly one that was, pandemic driven to a different trajectory. And then for organizations, if you don't realize you have to be nimble and agile at this point, then you haven't been paying attention, because so many things happen so quickly. I mean, we took our workforce remote in a week. And we decided to do it, and a week later it was done. And that was it. And 95% of those people haven't set foot in this office since, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it. And the ability to do that and continue your business really means being agile and being nimble and being adaptable. And now it's a matter of resilience, right? So it's a matter of making sure your folks feel connected and that they feel strong every day, because they're working in a whole different paradigm than they were before. So, I think, I don't know who said it, but, no good crisis should go, unattended. And crisis creates opportunity for those that are really thinking and willing to pivot and willing to act. And I think that that's been true with this pandemic. There are things that you would never think you would do And people, many people thought just in terms of the office environment, we need to be in the office every day. Everyone needs to be here. That's our culture. That's how we roll. That's just the way it needs to be. And I think that what we've done in the last 14 or 15 months has shown us it's not really the way it necessarily needs to be. Might still be for some companies the best way, but not for all companies. And I think people have found a different way to work that's going to permanently change the workforce in this country. I mean, think about the idea of more jobs just being remote, period, where you never have to go to an office. That puts the pool of potential employees for a company exponentially bigger than it used to be. Because if, you know, if my company no longer requires people to work in Chicago 5 days a week, that opens up the entire country to us in terms of, you know, opportunities. And it opens up opportunities for people everywhere in the country that they wouldn't have had if they weren't local before. So I think it's really, you know, really a lot of things here that have come out of this that are going to be decent improvements for us in the future. And everybody talks about back to normal. There's no going back to normal. We're going to a different spot. Not exactly sure what it is, but we're going to a different spot that isn't going to be what normal used to be, and it isn't going to be where we are today. So that's what I kind of firmly believe in. That's the advice I would give to the audience.
This has been Count Me In, IMA's podcast, providing you with the latest perspectives of thought leaders from the accounting and finance profession. If you like what you heard and you'd like to be counted in for more relevant accounting and finance education, visit IMA's website at www.imanet.org.